Entry via principle is to launch on the right cultivation for getting to grips with the crux of Chan practice, which is to get to the core, the suchness, the origin, the essence. If we should forget the primary aim of our cultivation and be occupied with only the complementing acts, we would have gone after the peripherals and defeated the main purpose of it all. It is for this reason that one must first get to the source of it before an entrance could be found, or else there would be no door to enter. To get to the source, it is helpful to first understand Bodhidharma's thoughts before reverting to the principles and practices advocated by the Chan school. On the surface, the above-mentioned passage does not seem to be talking about Chan per se. What it says is nevertheless closely related to Chan and can serve as material for the basic learning of Chan. As far as entry via principle is concerned, it is worth noting that to be enlightened on the tenet through the doctrine, one must realize that all living beings are of the same intrinsic nature. That intrinsic nature is not manifest, is purely because it is being shrouded by externalities. Hence the need to dispel the delusive and return to the true. The only way to do this is to have our attention fixated on the wall for meditative contemplation, so that our mind would be like a wall that is free from the corrosion of externalities. All externalities that bring about defilements and vexations are always related to the notions of self and other, right and wrong. To be able to fixate on the wall for meditative contemplation, a fundamental requirement is therefore to be rid of these notions, to stay steadfast and unwavering, not having to rely on the written text. As for entry via practice, it is a necessary requirement not only for Chan, but also other methods of Buddhist cultivation. Although it serves a supplementary role in cultivation, it is by no means less important. Applicable to all methods of cultivation, the significance of the four practices as stipulated in entry via practice can only be appreciated by delving into the depths of its content. Entry via principle deals with the methods for attaining enlightenment as well as the state of being enlightened. To dispel the delusive and return to the absolute reality of things, to be fixated on the wall for meditative contemplation without the notions of self and other, to look upon the worldling and the saint as one, to be steadfast and unwavering and not rely on the written text are all concerned with methods. To be in congruence with the principle, to be rid of discrimination, and to remain in quiescence are aspects of the state of being enlightened. However, reaching the state of enlightenment by means of those methods is not final. A further step is to let the body of enlightenment be functional and manifested in action. And it is exactly in the four practices that the practitioner must be engaged to accomplish this. What are the four practices? They are practices on how we should 1. React to grievances suffered. 2. Accord with conditions. 3. Forsake seeking. 4. Be consonant with the Dharma. 1. What is this practice on how to react to grievances suffered? When practitioners of the way encounter afflictions, they should tell themselves that for a long time, innumerable kalpas in the past, they must have abandoned their source and followed the tide, thus straying into mundane existence that bred aversion and aggression. Although no transgression has been made in the present life, the fruits of past misdeeds must have duly ripened. As what is being suffered now is neither caused by God nor man, they should readily accept it. Why is it said in the sutra not to despair when encountering adversity? It is because one has fully understood. If the mind is presently in line with this principle, the suffering of grievances would only help you to advance on the way. The content of the first practice is applicable in situations such as when one gets into the predicament of being wrongly accused. This practice is, in fact, similar to the paramita of forbearance, or the age-old saying of being kind to those who have done you wrong. Without this practice, one would not have effectively cultivated. It is quite impossible for everything in this world to be comprehensible or reasonable, nor is it realistic to expect anyone in this world to be forever satisfied. In face of these facts of life, what we can do is not to despair when encountering adversity. Not being able to do this would entail a restless and disgruntled mental state that would not make it impossible for us to have the mind like a wall. The main point regarding this practice is for the practitioner to recognize that anything unbecoming presently being suffered is likely the result of one's own unwholesome deeds in past lives, possibly extending to millions of kalpas ago. Although one may not be able to identify any misdeed done in this present life, yet the unwholesome seed must have been sown in the past, or else it would not have matured into the bitter fruit one is now tasting. In face of such suffering, one must not breed resentment, but accept it with forbearance. A positive way to look at suffering is not to bemoan it, but instead examine the cause of it. In fact, this is the only way by which one can sever from the root of suffering and stop it from growing. Understanding the law of cause and effect can help dissolve vengeful resentment, thus allowing entry into the right way. This is the practice on how one should react to grievances suffered. To be born into this world, which is typically unsatisfactory, is to experience suffering. The various kinds of suffering we have to endure can arise from nature, society, or the individual. Natural sufferings are birth, aging, sickness, and death. Sufferings engendered by society and the family include not getting what we want, being with those whom we dislike, and having to separate from those we love. Individual sufferings are mental afflictions attributed to the ever-burning five aggregates, which pertain to body-mind activities induced by our corporeality, feeling, sensation, thought, perception, volition, and consciousness. This last form of suffering is the most intense of all, because our body and mind are active at each and every instant. It is an ongoing process wherever and whoever you are. Every one of us, whether rich or poor, is afflicted by inner defilements and vexations. The forms of suffering, as manifested in each individual, may vary, but its stock content is common to all. Can we change this reality we are confronted with? The answer is no. We might not wish the branches of a tree to sway, yet the wind continues to blow. The only solution is for us to change our subjective views and let the wind of ignorance in our mind come to a halt. It is only when our emotions are no longer attached to things that we could be in consonance with the way. Therefore, it is only when our attention is focused on the wall without any notion of self and other, when we remain steadfast and unwavering against the onslaught of afflictions, that we could be freed from all kinds of suffering. Failure to do so would mean torment every day, every moment. This is why we must face the reality of suffering and accept it with forbearance before we can rise above it. Without understanding suffering and confronting it, we can never overcome and transcend it.